for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Going to talk about the best birdhouses for the birds in your yard to begin the show. And our guests are Alyssa Ruth Wolfson. Alyssa, a writer and an editor of many environmental, botanical, ornithological, and veterinary publications. Alyssa, welcome.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us, and great to have Margaret Barker with us as well. Margaret's a writer and educator. Margaret, welcome.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you with us as well. Their new book is called Audubon Birdhouse Book, Building, Placing, and Maintaining Great Homes for Great Birds. It's a really cool book. I've got it in front of me right now. Are you having problems attracting birds to your birdhouses? What questions you have about cleaning them, perhaps? Join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Well, maybe start by telling us how you got involved with birds. Margaret, maybe you go first.
Well, it happened a long, long time ago. My grandmother always fed the birds, and we always had a bird feeder right outside our dining room window. So was mesmerized by them as a kid, and then realized there are other birds out there way up high in the trees and along the shorelines, and I just was hooked.
Well, that's a good way to be. Alyssa, what about you?
Well, Larry, my story is a little different. I grew up in the Bronx in a very urban setting, in a high-rise housing development just off I-95 called Co-op City. And I didn't have a lot of birds, bird feeders, or bird houses in my life. So I've been making up for lost time ever since. When I got to college, which was at Cornell in Ithaca, New York, it was such a naturally beautiful place. I majored in environmental education and have been trying to come up to speed on plants and animals and all things nature ever since. Due to my natural deprived childhood, I ended up marrying an ornithologist and have been learning a lot about birds.
Okay, there we go. And you're right, Cornell is a beautiful setting, a great place to study. Well, why the heck do we need to provide housing for birds?
Well, there's just not enough habitat for them these days. They've really lost so much habitat through development, and they have a hard time finding places to nest. And that might not actually occur to a lot of people, that birds actually need places to nest, but they do. And nesting sites are hard for some birds to find.
And I would add that old dead standing trees where birds formerly cavity nesters would build their nests are becoming rarer and rarer because these old dead standing trees are perceived as ugly. And I put that in quotes. People often will take them down. And these cavities provide a wonderful service, and they're often made initially by woodpeckers. So woodpeckers were the original birdhouse builders. But if you ever have a chance to leave a standing dead tree in place, you'll be doing the birds a favor. And in places where those trees have been taken down, if you can put up a birdhouse, that helps substitute.
Yeah, along with the dead trees. I imagine climate change has had some effects on birds as well.
Yes, indeed. Climate change has had an enormous effect. It's, I believe, two-thirds of North American birds are at risk of endangerment or extinction due to climate change. So the situation for birds isn't getting any better. But there are things that people can do to help, and that's why we wrote the book, in order to kind of help people help birds go against these detriments like climate change, window strikes, outdoor cats, and the myriad of dangers that birds, and especially migratory birds, face.
Yeah.
We can give them a helping hand.
Well, and you do have some great directions in the book, making it fairly simple. Somebody might say, well, I can just go down to the local big box store and buy a birdhouse. But you say many of those are not safe havens for birds. Why is that?
Well,
go ahead. Yeah.
We're probably going to say about the same thing. A lot of the birdhouses, pre-made birdhouses you find in stores are made to look cute. They're highly painted. They're lacquered. Which can lead to overheating inside the nest box and just unsafe conditions. They might have perches on the outside, which has been shown to be a problem for birds because there are avian predators who can perch on those perches and wreak havoc with the nest, for example. So I think that one of the places that we started in the book was to advise people how to go out and buy a proper birdhouse, birdhouse.
Yeah, well, maybe at this point, and then we'll take some calls, but maybe first tell us talk about how your book is organized. Alyssa, do you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, sure. Our book is organized why birds, we start out with why birds need this form of human help, providing birdhouses. And then we have divided the birds into birds that live in boxes, like I guess most people would think of a bluebird, or purple martins, and the nest boxes you can build for those species. And then we have birds outside of boxes, like ospreys that nest on a platform, or like loons that may nest on a little island that you provide for them, or burrowing owls that nest in a burrow. So those are birds outside of boxes. Margaret and I had kind of shorthand. We had said the bibs and the bobs, birds in boxes and the birds out of boxes. But you can help both kinds of birds by providing nesting structures, whether it be a box or a non-box.
You mentioned bluebirds. Pat in Madison has something relating to bluebirds, I believe. Pat, hi.
I'm involved with the Bluebird Restoration Association in Madison, or in Wisconsin, and we do put out a lot of nest boxes. I work with Girl Scouts and Eagle Scouts a lot because they always are looking for nest boxes to build. And I've been steering them toward doing kestrel boxes, and even had one Eagle Scout that built platforms for osprey in the Madison area. So I just think a book like this is great information to direct them to and give them plans that they can use for doing these projects.
And I have to say that I recognize that voice, Patrick Reddy. Hi, Patrick. and on page 165 of the new edition of our book, Patrick has offered a photo essay of the lives of some ospreys that were initially, they were making a nest on a ballpark lamp area, and then eventually they were moved to a better site, less noise, less light, along the Yahara River. And that photo essay came out really, really well, Pat.
And Pat, thanks very much for calling. And you had a little piece in the book, too, about Lawrence Delaney, Minnesota guy, person, I think, relating to bluebird houses.
Dr. Z, yes. He really is credited with bringing back eastern bluebird populations. He was a Yes, I think as a youth, he was interested in bluebirds and then went to work as a chemist for USDA in the Beltsville area and established a bluebird trail that really helped to bring back populations in the Maryland area. And it's actually that bluebird trail still exists. He died a number of years ago. He was in his 90s. He was still maintaining the trail. But his bluebird house design really is the one that helped bring back eastern bluebirds.
Yeah, it was that kind of a, I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's credited with that, with bringing them back.
Yeah, it was a cool little story. Russ in Verona, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Russ.
Hey, hi there, Larry.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been interested in birds since I was a young man at the age of 8 when my dad built a purple martin house. And we attracted them. And, you know, I started building bird houses and putting them out in my yard. And then I had a long career in conservation for the city of Madison. Now I'm retired. And so I've come up with one of my passions besides the purple martins is to try to help woodpeckers. And so I've come up with a design where I make houses out of rigid styrofoam like you use in the construction trades.
Whoa, haven't heard about this. How does that work?
Well, actually, I kind of use like a laminated construction technique. I consider like I make a series of like donuts that I glue and screw together, and then I built it out from a plywood or a plastic backing, and then I stuff it full of wood shavings and then seal that away with a one-inch thick piece of foam board. And I put a number of those up in my yard in Belleville where I live, and I had a downy woodpecker that excavated 3 of them over the winter. Unfortunately, he just used them for winter roosting habitat, which is a good thing. I was hoping they would nest, but unfortunately spring came and they either didn't like it for nesting or couldn't compete with, unfortunately, the European house sparrows.
Oh,
I have to say, what a great use for styrofoam, because that's one of the plastics in our environment that cannot be recycled and ends up in bird stomachs and other inappropriate places. So congratulations to you for finding a good use for it.
I love it. Russ, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Kathy in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, this is Kathy Rinka from Schlitz Audubon Nature Center. I'm just happy that we were able to help contribute to the book. We work with Girl Scout troops all over our area on their Bronze Award project, making these nest boxes where they actually get to meet a live kestrel or eastern screech owl, one of the birds that live with us at the Nature Center. And afterwards, they get to hang them up in their area, or they can donate them to the center. And then we continue to teach them by using citizen science as a tool, making sure that they know what to do and how to track these animals and make sure that we keep these animals thriving in our area. I would also like to mention that we are going to have the book in our bookstore. And if people wanted to purchase the book, they can call our nature store and reserve a copy. So at Schlitz Audubon Nature Center.
Well, Kathy,
Cassie,
thank you so
much. Yeah, I was going to say, good to hear from Cassie. She contributed a photograph in our new section called Birdhouses in Science and Education.
And I'd like to give a shout out to Cassie and everybody else who's working with kids, because that's really it's the future of our environment. It's the future of birds thriving in our world. And Margaret and I have also written a book for kids called Audubon Birding Adventures for Kids, where we give a bunch of different activities, both indoors and outdoors, that kids can do to help them learn about birds.
Yeah,
so,
Kathy, thanks so much.
Shout out to all the teachers and educators out there who are doing environmental education with our kids.
And that Schlitz Audubon Nature Center is fabulous place to visit. I can tell you that for free. It's wonderful. Kathy, you're doing good work, Kathy. Thank you very much for calling. Well, we're talking with a couple of authors today, Margaret Barker and Alyssa Ruth Wolfson. They're the authors of the Audubon Birdhouse Building, Placing, and Maintaining Great Homes for Great Birds book. It's a wonderful book. Great to have them with us today. Great to have Christina Myshock as our engineer and Jill Nadeau as our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking birds and birdhouses on the show today with our two guests, Margaret Barker and Alyssa Ruth Wolfson, who are authors of the Audubon book, Birdhouse Book, Building, Placing, and Maintaining Great Homes for Great Birds. Great to have them along, as a matter of fact. And you can join in, too. Have you built any birdhouses of your own? Or what's your experience, Ben? Have you have questions about how to build? Give a call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Prairie in Clyde, Wisconsin, your turn. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I got interested in looking at birds as a beneficial animal for orchards. And I ran across this website, the Wild Farm Alliance, wildfarmalliance.org, and they had a really great document called Supporting Beneficial Birds and Managing Pest Birds in Agriculture. And it really just collected a lot of different studies and talked about, all of the different bird species that are actually, we're always hearing about how to keep your birds out of this and how to keep birds out of that and the damage they do. But they really do a lot as far as controlling harmful insects and even to some degree diseases and that sort of stuff. And I wanted to talk about, mention that website, but then also see if the authors had any experience or advice as far as, beneficial birds for gardening and orcharding.
Yes, all right, there's a wonderful project called the Hungry Owl Project. It's based in California. I just love this project because it's a win-win. So instead of putting out rodenticides, the Hungry Owl Project works with vineyards and other farmers to put out barn owl nest boxes. And the barn owls serve as natural rodenticides for the farmers and vineyard owners who would otherwise be putting out poison. And one poison rodent, if it's fed to a nest of barn owls, can wipe out the entire nest. But alternatively, a family of five owls can consume 3,000 rodents in one breeding season. So here's a win-win. It's a win for the vineyards, it's a win for the owls, and it's a win for the environment because all of these poisons are not being put out. So, yes, we have plans for barn owl nest boxes, too. So if rodents are a problem in your area, you might consider a barn owl nest box as an alternative. And their website is hungryowl.org.
And I might add that our barn owl nest box was designed by Steve Simmons. Who since passed on. He was from California. He banded more than 14,000 barn owls in his time. And he introduced people and farms to this concept of having barn owl nest boxes on hand for the barn owls to help control the rodent populations in particular. So that is his nest box design that we include in the book. And that's kind of what that is the idea that Alyssa and I had when we were starting to organize the book and research, was to go to people who are out there in the field, people like Steve Simmons, who are working with birds all the time, either as researchers or as birders, as woodworkers. Steve Simmons was all of the above, a very interesting guy. And so that you'll note throughout the book that for the most part, we went to people in the field and asked them, what's the nest box design that you're working with? And that's what we include in the book.
Yeah, there's some great. I mean, I'm just going through the book. You've really inspired me to make some birdhouses. I've never made any. I've had birdhouses up that have been pretty successful, but they look like fun projects, actually.
It can be as simple as a shelf for a robin or a phoebe. Under your porch overhang, so it doesn't have to be complex. We have a morning dove nest cone. It's not a box, but it's a cone that is just—it's pretty much a screen shaped into a cone and put in the crotch of a tree. And so something as simple as that—we've included those two designs in our book for kids too, just because they're so easy and so rewarding. And if you build it, they will come. That's the best part of putting up a birdhouse.
You're absolutely right about that. Well, Justin in La Crosse, we'll go to you now. Hi, Justin.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just had a question. I just recently purchased 17 acres, and I'm managing for rare and endangered species, so looking at one species I'm interested in attracting to my property is red-headed woodpeckers. Just wonder if their decline is because of lack of nesting habitat or, you know, snags with holes in them. But just wanted to see if there's a specific box and any specific parameters to look for in trying to make a nesting box for red-headed woodpeckers. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Justin.
This is Margaret, and I'm glad to know about this. I'm not aware of it, so I will be looking it up. But of course, woodpeckers, by and large, need the old standing trees to create nesting cavities. So that's one of the best things you could do with your new 17 acres is to make sure that you maintain some of the very, or a lot of the very old trees.
We do have a nest box designed for a northern flicker, but we don't include any other woodpeckers in our book because they're so good at making their own. They actually make three per year, one roosting hole for the male, a roosting hole for the female, and then a nesting hole. So woodpeckers are the original cavity nester, and then others, when they abandon them the next year, other birds will take over those cavities. So yes, the best thing to do for woodpeckers is leave standing dead trees.
Speaking of woodpeckers, Nelson in Madison emailed that woodpeckers ruined the front of two of his wooden bird houses. Should he replace the front with metal or... He wants to stop the woodpeckers from eating up, pecking away at his birdhouses.
That's a new one for me. I really don't have a good answer on that for that. But one idea that just comes to mind is to maybe, you know, double up on the wood, use thicker wood. I don't know, but that's a problem I hadn't heard of.
We have neighbors also whose woodpeckers, whose resident woodpeckers are pecking on their porch beams, and Yeah, if you try to think like a woodpecker, we've advised them to just put up something that they can peck on, maybe near the thing that you don't want them to peck on, and to make the thing you don't want them to peck on as unattractive as possible, maybe putting up some metal or screening where they've been pecking, or I can't think of anything else offhand, but give them a place to peck that's better than where they are pecking. Might be encouraged.
There you go.
Change their mind.
Well, let's see. Russ and Stoughton, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. Number one, how big is a barn owl box? And number two, are there any plans in this new book they have coming out for bat houses?
Okay.
We haven't put bat houses, but yeah, I've seen them all over, and they have limited success from what I've heard people reporting. For some reason, it's harder to attract bats to a bat box than birds to a bird box. The barn owl nest box. Let's see. I'm going to look this up for you.
I'm on that page, Alyssa, yeah. And right. It's Steve Simmons' design is interesting. It has a special extra compartment. So if I give you these dimensions, I'd probably have to add them
up. I see the front being 16 by 22 and 3/4. That's
right, for the front.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's a big box.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
But you've got all of the directions for building one in your book, right?
We do.
Yes, we do.
And placement is equally important. So wide open spaces that have abundant rodents, like a vineyard, are perfect settings for barn owl nest boxes. You might want to go to the Hungry Owl, I'm sorry, it's Hungry Owls, it's pluralized.org website, because they actually will come and put up, if you're in California, they will come and put up barn owl nest boxes on your property if you agree to stop using rodenticides. So maybe this can get going in other states too. I would love to see that idea take off.
Yeah. Or just get a copy of your book and build them yourself.
Well, we won't argue with that.
Russ, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, how do we get copies of the book?
Well, it is being carried by Barnes & Noble. And as Cassie said a few minutes ago, at her Nature Center as well. So the usual way, the publisher is Cool Springs Press, and that is an imprint of the larger publishing house called Quarto.
Quarto, but Amazon carries it as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Get the updated version because our original book came out in 2013. And it needed updates by the time we did this last year. So the latest and greatest will have a big label on it saying revised and updated. And we include a lot of information on gardening for birds, climate change, bird heroes, how to help migratory birds that were not in the original book.
There we go. And Russ, thanks again for calling. Bob in Claybanks, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
I've got a wood duck house that I put up this past winter, hoping they would find it in the spring. And I had a couple of wood ducks hanging around in the wetlands where it is, but they didn't take me up on it. And I wondered if there was any advice about how to position the house to make it more attractive.
Okay.
Can you tell us, can you describe where you have it right now?
Pardon?
Can you describe specifically how you have it placed right now?
It's in a tree, probably about 3.5-4 feet above the water, and facing northwest.
Okay. That sounds like a good placement. And had you seen wood ducks in that area before?
Yes, we had a pair that was kind of hanging around in the wetland off and on for a couple of weeks. And I saw them at another wetland, too, but I haven't seen them since probably May.
Man, I don't think I'd give up on that spot. I might give it another. What do you think, Alyssa?
I would just keep at it. It sounds like you've done everything right, and just don't give up. The other thing you might want to do, I don't know if there's a wood duck society in Wisconsin, but there are, I know, wood duck societies elsewhere, and connect with some people who work with wood ducks.
Yeah, because it sounds like the positioning on that is pretty darn good, to my mind. So, Bob,
exactly.
Keep at it. Maybe look up, go online to the Wood Duck Association, or type in Wood Duck Associations and see what pops up there. Nancy in New Richmond, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding birds in our yard. We have our big garage door open to go in and out to get the lawnmower and gardening tools, and the birds will fly into our garage, and they don't know how to get back out. Is there something I could use to scare them away from not coming into the garage, or what can we do besides close the door all the time?
Well, I've had this problem, too, over the years, and what works for me is that birds will fly to the light. And so if you turn out all the lights in your garage and then open whatever it is you have, garage door or side door, to the light, they should usually aim for that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. They're going to go for the light for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Nancy,
that's...
Yeah, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. A listener emailed that making birdhouses is a wonderful contribution to the environment. However, they must be monitored. European house sparrows are extremely detrimental to native birds. They claim nest boxes. They kill native birds, hatchlings, and even adults, especially detrimental to bluebirds, tree swallows, and purple martins. So all boxes need to be monitored to eliminate European house sparrow nests and eggs. And you actually have a little history of the house sparrows in your book, how they came to be here in the United States and so forth.
Right. And like so many birds, European starlings and house sparrows, house sparrows in general were thought to control insects, and so this non-native bird was brought to the United States and is really happy here. And European starlings, someone was missing the starling from his or her European home or English home, and brought them here, and they've proliferated. Those two birds are not protected by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, but they are really a nuisance for bluebirds in particular, since they can fit very well into those nest boxes. And monitoring is a very important process, a very important step in putting up a nest box. You really need to monitor your nest box in case there's a problem with starlings or other birds or insects.
Yeah, Christy in Stoughton has something that sort of relates. She emailed to ask if birdhouses are used for nesting in the, should the old nest be cleaned out before winter or left until the following spring as a source of insulation, perhaps, for birds that might want to use it in the winter?
There's no hard and fast rule on. Yes, there's no hard and fast rule on this. Personally, I remove the nests from my bluebird nest boxes because those nest boxes are used for roosting boxes in the winter. But I will put some something like pine needles, dried pine needles, or something in the bottom, just to give the birds something in there. But it's on the other hand, people are it is suggested to leave up old barn swallow mud nests, for example, because that actually helps the birds not to have to make the nests year after year after year. So it's kind of species dependent, and there seem to be no hard and fast rules. Other birds will reuse nests year after year as well.
Well, you have a lot of great information in this book, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today to talk about it. I'm going to try to make a birdhouse or two myself come this winter. Thank you, Margaret.
You're most welcome, and good luck making your birdhouses, Larry.
Margaret Barker and Alyssa Ruth Wolfson, our guests today. They are the authors of the book. It's the Audubon Birdhouse Book, Building, Placing, and Maintaining Great Homes for Great Birds. And I hope you have a chance to look at it. You'll probably be sucked in just like I was. Coming up, we're going to talk with Doug Tallamy, professor in the Department of Entomology and Wildlife Ecology. And he's got a great book, a bestseller that's come up so many times on the show, and we want to visit with him about wildlife populations and why they are in decline. Part of it has to do with some things you might not have thought much about. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.